Some employees at JEA say the city's utility can be a hostile environment for minorities. This morning, the latest in our exclusive investigation. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Just ahead, more employees at JEA come forward and accuse the utility of discrimination. You can hear more about this and join the conversation right now by calling 549-2937. Then later, the groundbreaking work of Jacksonville's Pace Center for Girls, plus comedian Jeff Bradley. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, we have an update on a WJCT investigation. More employees at JEA, the city-owned utility, are coming forward to accuse the company of discrimination against African-American workers. Now, five JEA employees have already filed a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, and it's being investigated. Since we first reported this story several weeks ago, more JEA employees are now considering filing similar complaints. We have new information this morning as we welcome two of those employees, Al Johnson and Terrence Adams, both employees at JEA. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and questions about the federal EEOC discrimination complaint filed by workers at JEA, African-American employees who say they were unfairly denied promotions within the utility? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show or weigh in on our Facebook page. And we need to start off by saying that JEA has already told WJCT that the utility cannot comment on this pending investigation, but that it's going to try to work with the EEOC to resolve it. So let's just make sure that that is clear. But Al, let's begin with you. How long have you been employed at JEA?
A total of about 7 years.
Yeah. And what do you do there?
Inventory control technician. It's a storeroom position, basic warehousing.
Okay. And so at what point did you start to feel that you were not getting a fair shake
at
JEA?
I actually, back in the latter part of 2014, applied for a couple of promotions. Thought I was pretty well qualified, pretty confident that, you know, I would be considered, especially being an internal candidate. But after sort of a shaky interview process and some other things, I just figured that there was more to this than I was actually seeing at first.
And what led you to believe that? What evidence did you present to the EEOC?
Well, in one particular instance, I applied for a promotion, and I was the only internal candidate who passed the written civil service exam. Now, typically, that's enough, but JEA has added an interview to the process. And in that interview, a passing score is 70, and I scored a 69. And that, to me, it's a very subjective process. Typically, in any civil service or government job, the passing of the written civil service exam is sufficient. But I believe that this is JEA's way to continue to promote the environment that's already present.
Your argument toward the EEOC is that the process wasn't transparent and that it was subjective, so that the utility could promote a white person over yourself?
Well, promote someone outside of my protected class.
Or someone
class.
Outside.
Right.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the fact that the EEOC doesn't take every complaint.
Exactly.
You and your coworkers have given a lot of documentation to the EEOC, and this is an active complaint.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence, let's talk about your story at JEA. What do you do for the utility?
Good morning. I'm a storekeeper at JEA. I've been in JEA over 27 years, basically working in the warehouse, inventory control, receiving, issuing of material.
And you applied for a promotion at one point?
Yes. Back in May of 2015, I applied for a stores working foreman, which is a supervisor position. I had the qualification. I had been upgraded in that position off and on for the past 16 years, and knew I was well qualified. And when the test came available, I knew what the requirements was. But unfortunately, we seen, not only me, but some of my co-workers also seen, that they changed the qualifications. They lowered the qualification to allow other people to take the test, which they have never done since I've been there. And before I've been there, I was told they never done this. And the word was already out. They had a certain individual in mind. And so as it went forth, I questioned it also, the why we dropped the qualification. And I got an answer from one of the managers who was on the hiring team that he told me they want to bring in more well-qualified individuals. But like I said, you can see the handwriting on the wall from the way JA was doing things, that if they have someone in mind for a position, no doubt about it, they're going to get that position. And the same thing happened in my situation also.
And it's your contention, and several other employees have joined this complaint, that you're alleging a specific form of discrimination. Your allegation is that you've been denied promotions because you're African American.
Yes, I believe that is the main thrust of it. Also, when you're in cahoots and when you're friends with the bosses, and you do things outside of the company with the bosses, especially as Caucasians, you're going to have a better chance of getting positions than African-Americans.
We'll go to your calls about the federal EEOC complaint against JEA in just a moment at 549-2937. Al, as I mentioned, the EEOC is actively investigating this. They've offered to expedite the process by going into mediation, but JEA has refused that. This is a high bar to prove, though. Proving discrimination is difficult.
Oh, yes.
What would you say to those listening who might think you just have sour grapes, that you're complaining because you didn't get a promotion you wanted?
Well, the biggest thing with me is we don't want to turn this into an individual thing. We don't want to turn it into a show. Basically, I would say just look at the evidence. Over the past 5 years, JEA has maintained over 75% white employees. When they only represent about 55% of the population. And in that same span, they've happened to maintain right at 16 to 17% African Americans when we represent over 35%, 34, 35% of the population. So it's not just that issue. I mean, I was at a point where I could have walked away from the entire situation, sought other employment, but it's actually bigger than me. It's about the community, economic opportunities, and things of that sort. So it's not an individual thing. It's actually the proof is actually there.
You've provided documentation to the EEOC, and since we first reported this story, you've assembled more documentation. Can you share that?
Yeah, that's correct. All information we're getting is from JEA, so it's JEA material. And what we're providing with the EEOC, also, we're providing emails, and some of them are racist emails. And these people have moved on into management positions, and they are writing and they're sending out racist email on JEA servers. And so,
what do the emails show or say?
They're downgrading African Americans, and like I say, these are managers in appointed positions, and JEA has not addressed these issues yet. And also, we went to City Hall to talk to the mayor and his staff, but of course we didn't get a chance to meet with the mayor, but he did allow us to meet with his staff. And they met with JEA, and from the discussion we got with the mayor's staff, we met with Sam Musa and Kerry Stewart, and they said that there were small problems, according to JEA, there were small problems at JEA, but they will get them corrected.
And Al, when your colleague Terrence says that emails are being passed around within the utility that downgrade African Americans by people who are in management positions, can you share what the specifics of these emails are?
Well, one email in particular, I think it was something like, what is Father's Day like in the hood? And we know that the hood is a reference to the African-American community. There was a sign. There was a picture of a young boy holding up a sign. And on the sign, it either had daddy or father and then question marks. And it showed an entire group of African-American men running away from that child. So it's just the typical stereotype that we don't assume our responsibilities and things like that.
So what you're saying is that racist email jokes were circulating within the company. And how did you come into possession of these emails?
Well, we actually had a coworker who kind of slipped them to us. He was able to, I don't know how specifically, but he was able to put his hands on them. And like Terrence said, the disturbing thing about that is that some of these people, although the emails, I think they go back to 2010, maybe 2011. Mm-hmm. But now some of these people are in management positions with the responsibility of hiring and promoting.
So your allegation is not only that you've been denied promotions, but that there's a company-wide culture issue.
Oh, yeah. That's a systemic issue. There's definitely a systemic issue. And JEA doesn't want to address it. I think the way they've dealt with it in the past is they deal with each individual case, but we want to bring more light to this so it's not an individual thing. It can be looked at for what it is, and that's systemic discrimination.
And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with JEA employees Al Johnson and Terrence Adams, we want your calls as we discuss the growing number of workers at the utility that are joining a federal EEOC complaint accusing JEA of discrimination. JEA cannot comment on this pending investigation. We have asked for their comment, but we want your calls right now at 549-2937. Let's go to Keith in Riverside. Hi, Keith. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I want to applaud these gentlemen for coming forward. They're talking about specific criteria, very objective, specific criteria. Every time, we all know that racism is pervasive in the country, but each time someone comes forward, organizations will bend over backwards trying to find a way to make it about something other than race, when in fact, if you strip away pretty much everything else, all you're left with is race. So I applaud these gentlemen for coming forward, and I encourage every other member of JEA who has experienced any of this sort of behavior to come forward, because the more you put the sunlight on this, the less possibility is it will continue.
All right. Thanks, Keith. Now, JEA, as I mentioned, is city-owned. It's a public agency. You have filed a request asking for more emails around this issue that you are trying to take a look at.
Yes, we have done that. We got some charges back from JEA concerning emails. I think I got a charge back concerning some emails I requested from JEA earlier part of this year. They told me it would be around $6,000, and how they work this, I can put down half on it. And then once I put down half, they would get started. And then before they turn over the emails that I requested, I would have to pay the total amount. I think other guys have done the same thing. So totally, I believe we're in the ballpark right now requesting emails from JEA. JEA's in the neighborhood of telling us it's going to be between $15,000 to $20,000 to provide these emails to us.
And once you get these emails, what's your goal with this EEOC complaint? Because this could take years to complete. The EEOC could end up ruling that there's no proof of discrimination.
Right.
So what is your goal?
The goal is to, just like the caller just said, it's to shed some light on exactly what's going on. A lot of things have been going on behind the scenes well before I got to JEA. So we basically want to shed some light on it, make the community aware, the African-American community, the white community, just the community in general, and just bring them up to speed on the discriminatory practices that are going on at JEA. Ultimately, we want it to be class action. So I think Keith, I think that was your caller's name, Keith made a very good point. It's going to take a collective effort. More employees, past and present, who have experienced these kind of discriminatory actions by JEA to come forward and just kind of stand in solidarity with us.
Do you anticipate that they will and that they would join a federal class action lawsuit?
Yes, I anticipate they will. As a matter of fact, we've gotten very positive response since the story broke with WJCT. And we're just looking forward to actually making sure that, you know, JEA is one of the largest employees in Jacksonville. We want to see some equality of opportunity. I think the mayor talks a lot about one city, one Jacksonville. But when you strip an entire protected class of equal employment opportunities and equal opportunity for economic success, then that's when you get into crime and all of these other areas. So we just want this to be for the greater good of our community.
And can you share how many African Americans are in management or senior positions at JEA? Have you looked at that? Is that part of your complaint?
Yes, that's part of the report. We actually don't have that number, but there are very few.
Yes.
There are very few in senior leadership and upper managerial positions.
Bill is in Clay County. Hi, Bill. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. This is a subject that's kind of close to me. I ran a business in Connecticut for about 27 years. And one of the things I understood when I came to Florida is the right-to-work laws allow managers, first-line managers, to say anything they want to employees. In a lot of cases, you might have a manager that's biased, uncouth, racist, has an ideology that's, is against African Americans. You can say anything he wants. And basically, when you push back on it, you can be fired. And a lot of times, the people that you work with recognize the fact that if they join that individual, they can be fired, too. So I think one of the problems is the fact that in Florida, we have this right-to-work law that allows managers to say anything they want. A lot of cases, just like the gentleman said, these managers hobnob with senior management, hang out with them, smack down, catfishing, corn thawing, and the whole deal. And so they feel very comfortable in conducting themselves in a way that's not really conducive to the welfare of the organization. I know the state I lived in, we had regulations against that type of conduct. I know down here I've been called a pedophile, discriminated against based on my religion, my political affiliation, very openly. And this is something that wouldn't have been tolerated in other states where they didn't have work the right laws.
All right.
That's the start there. Okay.
Thanks, Bill. Marianne in Fernandina Beach. Go ahead, Marianne. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to compliment these men, and I'm so proud of you. Keep up the good fight, and especially in today's environment with what's going on with Black Americans. Just be careful and gain momentum, and it looks like you're going to win this. It's just going to take some time. I'm with you all the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. 549-2937. Anthony on the South Side, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead.
I just want to make a quick comment. I heard your guest talk about systemic racism, which of course is something we need to fight against. But I feel like systemic racism is a little bit more complicated to prove. Just because it involves like a policy maybe the company has or some kind of rule or some kind of, something that the company itself promotes, some kind of racism. You know, I see this situation maybe more as, like he was saying before, an individual situation or something like a person being either racist or maybe a misunderstanding. Just trying to play devil's advocate here. That's the comment I want to say.
Thank you for that. What about that perspective? That maybe what you perceive to be the case could be misunderstood, or that there might have been other reasons behind what you're seeing at JEA.
Well, let me say this. I was born and raised in Jacksonville. I'm a military veteran. I seen my father and my forefathers fight the same thing that I'm fighting now, which is really it's mind-boggling that we're doing this in 2016. But back in 95, 96, I filed EEO complaint within in-house JEA, racial discrimination. I had a supervisor make a racial comment to me in front of 20 employees and very, very downgraded me in a safety meeting with racial slurs. Like I said, supervisor at JEA and filed a complaint with JEA. JEA at first tried to put it to the side, but I had some co-workers behind me that was continuing to tell me to fight, and I continued to pursue it. And so JEA did do something about the supervisor who made a racial complaint against me. But that's the culture at JEA. And anytime, let me say this too. Anytime you stand up for what is right, you better be ready for backlash.
Do you think that you have been denied promotion since you filed a complaint some 20-odd years ago?
Well, it's good.
And that
good
there was a backlash
that.
Against you for that?
It's good you said that, because one of the managers that was on the interview team, he asked me about the complaint that I filed 20 years ago. And he wasn't even at JEA. He has no more than a year at JEA. So my question is, how did he get knowledge of this? If this was 20 years ago, he only had 1 year at JEA. So how was he aware of this? So,
By the way, we need to point out at the company, there's a difference between appointed and civil service positions that factors into who gets promoted. Right. You can read a little bit more about the complexities of that at our story on this EEOC complaint at WJCTnews.org.
Yeah, I just want to go back to your caller, Anthony. You know, he said he was playing devil's advocate. That's something that we're quite used to. In situations like these, organizations like JEA, they try to make it look like these are isolated incidents. But I want to say that it takes a bunch of isolated incidents to make one collective complaint or collective charge. And I always want to point people back to the numbers. The numbers are proof. And we've only gone back 5 years, but there are decades of data that's available at JEA. But these last five years that we've researched is proof that African-Americans have been adversely impacted at this company. Now, in regards to it being difficult to prove, I think that speaks to the seriousness of this. We understood that going into this process, but once again, there's a greater good that goes beyond individual retribution. This is a community effort, and we want to be able to bring opportunities to the inner city. When you have JEA hiring people from Georgia, hiring people from other counties, taking jobs away from the citizens in the inner cities of Duval County, it's just interesting. I was in Memphis over the holidays, and Memphis Light, Gas, and Water, one of the stipulations is you have to live within the county, Shelby County, in order to be get a job with them, with that city agency. And we think, you know, when you take jobs and just kind of filter them outside of this, it just speaks something greater than just an individual.
Would their argument
problem.
Be, well, we need to be as competitive as possible. We need to find the best available talent from the whole region.
Right. I think you can find the best available talent when you set your heart and your mind to actually searching out that talent. There's plenty of talent within the inner cities of Jacksonville. And once again, all of this goes back to economic opportunities. You know, once those young men and those young women within the inner city feel like that they don't have a shot, you're going to see an increase in crime. It doesn't matter how many police officers. There's a lot of frustration that's associated with this within the African-American community.
D-Len in Jacksonville. D-Len, go ahead. You're on the air. Okay, we'll try Seedley. Seedley in downtown Jacksonville. Seedley, you know, are you there? Go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Yes. We are an architectural engineering firm in Jacksonville and a minority African-American owned. We used to participate in the minority requirements when the water and sewer was separate from the electrical company. At that time, we used to work for provide electrical engineering for a firm. We did good job so that the firm would take us on an outside job separate from the Jacksonville jobs. As soon as JEA took over the water and sewer, they eliminated the minority requirement. And although we have been doing very, very good job with this company, they dropped us like hot potato because JEA eliminated minority requirement from the water sewer, just like they have it in the electrical company.
Okay.
And this is JEA's operation activity in as far as minority is concerned.
Thanks for that call. We don't know the full reason behind why they made that change, but we are continuing to report on this story. Let's go to D-Len in Jacksonville. D-Len, are you there?
This is Glenn.
Glenn. Okay, somebody made a typo. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yes, I like to make a statement. This is a clear place everybody remember the Bible, David and Goliath. I'm just commending you guys. Just keep your head up. Keep going. What you do, and that let nobody discourage you, because this is something serious. Because I've been working in the system for like 30 years, and it's about time somebody addressed this.
Where do you work? Do you work at JEA as well?
No, but I've worked for other the city and Duval County, and it's not just JEA. It's all across. Just look and see the guys who have authority, supervisor position, all that. And the same thing happened to JEA. It's all over. So I just commend you guys to stepping up and keep the faith and keep doing what you're doing. Don't let nobody discourage you, because this feels David and Goliath. And at the end, you guys will win. Thank you.
Thank you for that call. We need to stress once again that we have reached out to JEA for comment on our exclusive investigation into this federal EEOC discrimination complaint filed by employees at the utility. JEA cannot comment on a pending investigation. So, Al Terrence, you said you're continuing to accumulate more documentation and that more employees are interested in joining the complaint. What are the next steps for both of you?
Go ahead.
Well, at this time, we're formulating, bringing other people on board, listening to their complaints. We're seeing the same thing that is, it's not just in a department, it's company-wide. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to better Jacksonville as a whole. We want to get the attention of the CEO of JEA, Paul McElroy. We want them to sit down and say, hey, we have a problem. And see, that's the first step in this process. They must understand, they must see, hey, we have a problem. Let's reach out to these guys and these ladies and let's address this. And what we're going to do, we're going to continue to fight. You know, we in this for the long haul. You know, nothing happens overnight. So we're going to continue to fight. We're going to continue to organize. And our main objective here is to make changes for the whole city of Jacksonville. We can put all the street lights up around the city. We can hire all the police that we want for the city. But unless you give each person economic opportunities, you're going to still have major crime. You're going to still have problems within the city of Jacksonville. And it's already known. And we hear it all the time on the news. We hear it at JEA. This city is a good old boy system. It's a good old boy system, and it has to be addressed. And that particular system, we're going to break that system down. Whatever it takes, we're going to break down that good old boy system. And I just want to close and say this. As I said earlier, I'm a veteran. When I went off to fight for this country, I didn't fight for Black America. I didn't fight for White America. I didn't fight for Hispanic America. I fought for the United States of America. And if I can put 6 years of a blank check of my life on the line for this country, surely this fight against JEA is part of the process.
I think we just, like Terrence said, we just want to bring full exposure to the situation. We're going to continue to make records requests. We're going to continue to dig and dig. We're going to continue to reach out to our coworkers, past and present, to get some idea of the experiences that they had at JEA. We're actually working with the NAACP. We're actually going to reach out to other local organizations because we want to see this situation resolved. And it goes right back to what he said. Until you acknowledge that there's an issue, you can keep kind of patching it up. But until you actually really address it, then the situation won't get any better. But we're going to continue in the direction that we're going.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Al Johnson and Terrence Adams are two of a group of JEA employees that have filed a federal racial discrimination complaint with the EEOC. This story reported by our own Ryan Bank, and you can read that story at wjctnews.org as we continue to follow it. Much more still ahead. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Amelia Island Museum of History presents the 10th Annual Holiday Home Tour, featuring five holiday-decorated homes in Fernandina Beach on December 2nd and 3rd. Information at ameliamuseum.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the U.S. media is accustomed to covering a White House that plays by certain rules. But Donald Trump tweets false information freely and frequently manipulates the media. How journalists are rethinking their role under a Trump presidency. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
WJCT and ViStar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all ViStar Credit Union locations and two men in a truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Well, the Pace Center for Girls, based here in Jacksonville, is making a national impact with its trauma-informed and gender-responsive model, helping girl-serving organizations nationwide. Recently, Pace won a major grant from the Justice Department. CEO and President Mary Marks is here with more about that. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And very exciting news. This is sort of a groundbreaking grant for you.
It is. Well, Pace Center for Girls over the past 6 years has really been growing by leaps and bounds. We started here 31 years ago. And since that time, we have grown from 100 girls to now serving 2,800 girls every year and really planning to take a national footprint.
These are at-risk girls, girls in particular, that have suffered trauma, whether it's sexual or physical abuse, poverty, family instability. You make life-changing interventions in their lives. How will this grant help you advance that work?
One of the things since the beginning of PACE 31 years ago, we have always been strength-based and trauma-informed before people actually understood what that term was. And this grant will help us infuse our classroom with trauma-informed practices, as well as help to support the work around reauthorizing the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act.
And tell us a little bit more about that act.
Well, the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act is an act that allocates resources at the federal level towards prevention and early intervention and keeping kids out of the system.
That is so important because once they tip into that system, it's like spiraling down a rat hole for so many kids, and girls in particular.
And Jacksonville and Florida have really been leaders in this work. With the Pace Center for Girls and many others, Florida has really taken the lead. And we've seen a 40% decrease in the number of girls who have been arrested in the state of Florida in the past 6 years.
This is an academic model, by the way, that you're working on.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we serve a very holistic model in which girls come to us and we provide their full academic school day and comprehensive wraparound social services.
Pace Center for Girls is an incredible organization based here in Jacksonville, but with a national footprint. You've influenced so many other groups around the country with this work. So it's such a pleasure to highlight it right now.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
She's Pace Center President and CEO Mary Marks. Much more still ahead, including comedian Jeff Bradley. Keep listening.
FPL, powering Florida with natural gas, nuclear, and solar. FPL's commitment starts from the power of its people, working to bring energy to Floridians. More information is online at FPL.com. Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, this is exciting news. Oscar winner Goldie Hawn will be the star attraction this weekend at the 40th anniversary of the Art and Antiques Show, benefiting Wolfson Children's Hospital. This much-loved cultural event showcases more than 40 art and antiques dealers from across the country. Event co-chair Anna Neal is here with a preview. And Anna, it's a beautiful event, but in particular this year, you've got some celebrity appeal with Goldie Hawn coming in to speak. What's she going to be talking about?
Good morning. Yes, this year we decided to go a little big and invite Goldie Hawn. She's going to be here speaking about the Hawn Foundation and her Mind Up curriculum that she has. It's used throughout the United States. And also, we just felt that she really fit with our theme this year of the 1970s and going back to when the Women's Board began.
And this, her program is called Mind Up, and that's a program that she has taken to classrooms around the country?
Correct. A lot of guidance counselors use it, and classroom teachers use it to empower children and just teach them to be successful in their everyday lives.
That's exciting. So if you love Goldie Hawn, come on out and see her, but also come on out to the event, because as I said, anyone who loves art and antiques, this is Mecca for them.
It is a wonderful event. The dealers are actually moving in right now as we speak. And they are all from all across the country. We don't have anyone local, so it's pieces of art and antiques that you would not normally be able to find here in Jacksonville.
There's also a children's fashion show featuring current and former Wolfson patients. This all benefits Wolfson Children's Hospital.
Exactly. And the fashion show is my favorite piece. And we just love getting to know those children each and every year.
It's an incredible event, and it's hard to believe that this has been going on now for 40 years in Jacksonville. There's
Absolutely.
A lot of history behind this event.
There's a lot of history, and since the Women's Board has been putting on the Art and Antique Show, we've raised over $28 million for Wolfson Children's Hospital.
$28 million.
$28 million. Last year was $2.1 million.
That is incredible.
Yes, yeah.
What a track record. Now, again, this is coming up Friday through Sunday at the Prime Osborne. Tickets still available.
Tickets are still available, especially for Goldie Hawn. Those can be found on our website.
And that is?
That is womensboardwch.com.
It is the 40th anniversary of the Art and Antiques Show benefiting Wolfson Children's Hospital. Anna Neal of the Women's Board of Wolfson's here. And again, Goldie Hawn will be speaking. Pretty exciting. I'm a big fan of hers. So kudos on getting her. And have fun out there.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Again, that's December 2nd through the 4th at the Prime Osborne. Well, China off the beaten path. The road recently traveled by our own travel expert, Judy Wells. And she's here back from another fabulous adventure. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You were in China?
I was in 3 weeks in China.
Three weeks in China. Of course you were. You're Judy Wells.
A typical tour of China, Beijing, the Great Wall, the Terracotta Warriors in Xi'an, and the Three Gorges in Shanghai.
You did all of that?
No, I didn't do any of that. I went to Wenzhou, Wenxing County, ancient villages like Furong, Yangtu, and Kangpo. These are really, really, hundreds of years old.
So you picked places that people would never think to
go. Yeah, I went to Sichuan Province in Chengdu, which is a wonderful city. It's kind of the western Shanghai. And two national parks, both UNESCO sites in the Tibetan Plateau and the giant panda breeding research base.
What attracted you to doing
China?
Well,
I had a meeting over there, and it's a chance to – I always like to see things I haven't seen.
And when else would I
see these things?
Exactly. Now, had you been to China before?
I had been to China before, had done everything but the Terracotta Warriors in Xi'an. I hope to do that this time, but I didn't. I had a meeting I had to, a board meeting I had to
attend.
What
tips do you have for people that want to go to China? And they really, it's vast. It might seem intimidating. They don't know where to begin. They need to start by going to your website, wellsworld.net.
Yes.
But how do you travel China if you're not a savvy traveler like, say, Judy Wells?
Go on a good tour.
Yeah.
That's my advice. You need a tour guide who speaks English. Who knows where the good bathrooms are. Because if you're off the beaten path, there's not always a good bathroom.
Uh-huh. That's a good tip. And, a pro tip from you.
Yes. Yeah. You never pass a good one by because you don't know when the next one's coming.
How was the food in the off-the-beaten-path cities?
It was outstanding.
Yeah.
It was really good. Of course, the trick is you never know when the meal ends until the fruit comes. But
that's
in
dessert.
A lot of places, if it's a really wonderful meal, they don't want you to fill up on the rice. So the fruit may come before the rice.
Oh, my gosh. Only you would know this.
Well, you learn by experience.
Now, you were there for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
And where are you off to next?
I'm not sure. I'm staying home
That's
for a while.
That's unprecedented.
It is unprecedented.
You don't know where you're going
Well,
next?
I'm not going anywhere until after the first of the year, and I might spend a couple of days in New York City. After that, I'm just not sure. It's open.
Are you open to suggestions from your many fans?
Always open to suggestions.
They need to email you.
Yes, they do.
Now, okay, so what are you doing for Christmas? Staying put?
I'm staying put.
Okay.
I'm going to enjoy Jacksonville.
How about that?
And also let my suitcases cool off.
How many trips have you taken this year?
I don't count.
I've lost track.
But I'm looking for places to go, and I'm probably one of the first places I'm looking is the annual Society of American Travel Writers travel auction. Most people don't know about this. We've kind of kept it a secret over the years. It's supposed to be a fundraiser, but we like to do our own trips at a bargain. But it's open to the public. It's on now, and between December the 4th, midnight Eastern Standard Time, you can bid on things like a 10-day Amazon River cruise in Peru for two, 4 days, 3 nights, inclusive vacation for two adults in the deluxe room category at a Sandals Resort in Jamaica, Antigua, St. Lucia, Barbados, the Bahamas, or Grenada. Two-night all-inclusive stay for two in the Ambassador Suite of the Grand Villas Los Cabos, which doesn't open until next month, on Mexico's Baja Peninsula. And this is one of my favorites. Five nights accommodations for two in the Markliffe Hotel and Spa, Aberdeen, Scotland's only five-star hotel, plus a round of golf for two at Trump International Links, Royal Aberdeen, Cruden Bay, and Mercar. And we've also got things that are a lot less expensive. These might be less expensive. These are always less expensive than what you would pay. You have getaways to St. Augustine, Branson, Nashville, Charleston, Toronto, Fort Myers Beach, Alabama's Coast, Jekyll Island, Dollywood, Maine, Asheville,
Dollywood.
Hawaii.
Isn't Dollywood about to get burned
no,
down?
No, it escaped.
Good.
That brand new hotel she just built. It's supposed to be really luxurious.
Well, listen, if you like to travel, you need to bookmark Judy's website. It's wellsworld.net.
If there's a deal, I'll tell you about it.
She will. She knows them all, believe me. I have seen this, and I look at her website for ideas. Although, of course, unfortunately, I don't get to travel as much as Judy was.
We'll have a few opportunities this year for you, I hope.
I hope so. But it's always good to see you, and good to see you're staying put for a few weeks. You probably need to rest up a little bit. Judy Wells, as always, thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Variety comedian Jeff Bradley, right after this.
On the next Fresh Air, Kenneth Lonergan talks about writing and directing Manchester by the Sea, a new film about grief and guilt, starring Casey Affleck as a man who, after the death of his brother, is asked to become his nephew's guardian and just can't. Lonergan also wrote and directed You Can Count on Me and Margaret and wrote the play This Is Our Youth. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
In 1791, the clarinet was still a work in progress. It hadn't fully been accepted as a member of the orchestra. Mozart's Clarinet Concerto helped change that. It's on the way from a concert in Zurich, Switzerland. Jörg Widmann soloing with the Tonhalle Orchestra. On the next performance today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. surprising.
And welcome back. Well, finally this hour, if you take one part stand-up comic, mix in a little Penn and Teller, maybe even a dash of Cirque du Soleil, well, you might come close to describing Jeff Bradley's unique show. It's a welcome dose of comedy, stunts, illusions, and theater. And Jeff Bradley is making his Jacksonville debut appearance Thursday night at the Mudville Grill Listening Room. We've got a preview right now. Jeff Bradley, good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me here.
Thanks for being here. And it was a shame that Hurricane Matthew meant that your show had to be rescheduled. But luckily, it's back on Thursday night. First time in Jacksonville?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I'm excited by this.
And we're excited to have you because you do a really unique act. How did you develop it?
Well, I wanted to get on stage. And I knew how to juggle, and that seemed to be my excuse to get up there. I was quite a shy kid, so I went up there with little tricks and something, but it developed from there.
And you've been called everything from hysterical to a virtuoso. People don't know how...
And a few things in between.
And a few things in between, but you're not easily... Your act, your appeal isn't easily categorized.
Yeah, and I find that people do want to categorize things, and it's really difficult. And even when people leave the show, not that they confuse what they saw, but they'll say, oh, that comedian was great, or I like the magician, or what about the juggling? But I always tried to break the rules, try to be non-traditional and stand out, even though I'm doing magic, juggling, mime,
now,
that have been around for thousands of years.
Yeah, you just said stand out.
Yes.
You're Canadian.
I am.
You're from Toronto, I just learned. So you are going to have, I would think, a really interesting take on our political process here in the States. Do you talk about that?
Well, I try to keep things, the problem with politics these days is you're going to divide the room,
right,
no matter what you say.
Yeah.
And I want everybody to have a good time. So that's not to say you can't touch on that, but ultimately people come out to feel good, not to go away feeling bad.
Yeah, so, you want people to be laughing and you really
there
do
may
lift
be some
them up.
Things that you might want them to think about, but you don't want a lecture and you don't want anybody leaving upset. And that's whether you're dealing with a heckler, whether you're dealing with politics, whether you're dealing with anything, it should be, the goal should always be try to make 100% of these people happy. And if you hit 95, you're doing well.
How do you put the act together? You're doing mime, you're doing juggling, you're doing jokes, there's a lot in this.
I like to think of each part of the act as a little sitcom, little situation comedy in which I'm one of the players, and if I use a volunteer, they're another one of the cast members, and if there's props involved, they're a cast member. I write these scenarios, and then whatever will fit into it. If I have an idea, I really want to put in this juggling bit. It's been a while since I've done any juggling, so let's figure out this. But the problem with juggling is it's invariably predicated on, look what I can do that you can't.
Right, exactly. And that makes us all feel really inadequate.
And that's a pretty dull, a dull premise. So I try to avoid that. You know, it's not a showing off thing.
Right. And the audience involvement is key to your show.
Yeah. I like to have people, and again, make as positive an experience for everybody.
Now, you'll be performing Thursday night at Mudville also with Mike Lagasse, a singer and guitarist with St. Augustine's Wild Shiners Band. A little music, too.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice evening of going out.
Exactly. And I hope that it's a little warmer down here for you right now than it is up in Toronto. You just told me never visit there past Halloween, so I will remember that.
Yeah. Remember, we Canadians, we hibernate from about November to March.
Exactly. So you picked a good time to come down here, Jeff Bradley. It's a pleasure to meet you, and it's going to be a great show. Your first ever in Jacksonville, so enjoy your time here.
Well, thank you very much.
He is Variety comedian Jeff Bradley. Now, this act was rescheduled due to Hurricane Matthew. It's back on tomorrow night, his Jacksonville debut, Thursday evening at the Mudville Grill Listening Room at 3105 Beach Boulevard. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. That's coming up tomorrow. Meanwhile, that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and WJCT's app. Diane Rehm's up next with a look at why false information and Donald Trump's manipulation of the media has journalists rethinking their role under a Trump presidency. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. Tomorrow, tune in at 9 a.m. for our quarterly show, Faith Matters. We'll be back Friday with our media roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.